C6, number 24A.
Before I go on in this same line, I must make an interjection. Point 7, syllogism. Syllogism. Do you mean you have never read the textbook? Mrs. Eddy demands that Christian Science must be able to state correct syllogisms, that we must go out from accurately stated syllogisms, she says. And it is in the same place where, in the marginal heading, she says mathematics and scientific logic. And she asks there that if both the major and the minor propositions of a syllogism are correct, the conclusion, if properly drawn, cannot be false. She is saying that actually her reasoning is based on syllogisms that are accurately stated. Now, do you know what the syllogism is? If the whole textbook remains on stating accurate syllogisms, if you don't know, you can ask yourself, why have you been studying at all the textbook? Because you can only reason out the textbook correctly if you know how to state an accurate syllogism. All the rest is just mysticism, reading nice statements, but not logically reasoning out. And that is what one is seeing so much in Christian Science, that you get all kinds of books coming out in the field of Christian Science that prove to you that matter is spirit and spirit is matter. They prove it to you through all the references of the textbook, and all can be reduced down to just one little thing: your syllogism is stated wrongly. So be careful. One can't reason in terms. One has to reason in syllogisms. And if we reason in Christian Science with terms, oh, you really get off. You really get wide off. So let's have a little look at least what a accurately stated syllogism means. In a syllogism, you have two things. You have first the premise, and you have a conclusion. And she says the premise must be stated accurately so that the conclusion is drawn rightly. What does it mean to state the premise rightly? The premise, as you know, consists of two parts, of a major proposition and of a minor proposition. It means, as in logic, that the major proposition and the minor proposition must be stated accurately. And what does that mean? And you know what people do in Christian Science, and what all the students do in Christian Science? They think if they take two statements from the textbook and put it there as premises, that then the conclusion is right. That we first have to evaluate the proposition rightly. Are they right propositions? What does it mean? The major proposition is a statement of a general character. The minor proposition must not be just another statement. It must be a statement about the major proposition. If it's minor, then it must be about the major. It must say something that is minor, smaller than the big major proposition. So we can't just take two statements and just put it there and say, let's draw a conclusion. It would always be that the major is a general statement, the minor proposition is a specific statement about the major proposition. Therefore, in a premise, you have the so-called middle term. The middle term. The middle term is that term in those two propositions which are common to both propositions. That term which appears, so to say, or in the major and minor proposition, therefore is the middle term. And only when a syllogism is stated this way, a conclusion drawn from it can be right and therefore give us a new insight. The most common syllogism that practically all the books on logic give is the following one. But I always read it in German. Do you write Socrates or Socrates? With an S? Okay. So here you have a syllogism. The first one is the major proposition saying all men are mortal. That's general, all men. Then you have the minor proposition, which must be specific. Socrates, you see, Socrates is only one out of all men. Socrates is a man. Then you can draw your conclusion. You usually make a line under the minor proposition, and that means now I draw the conclusion. What is the conclusion? We arrive at the conclusion by first asking, what is the middle term? What is the middle term here? The middle term is that term, we said, which is common to both propositions, and that would here be man. So if we take out of the major and minor proposition man, then the reasoning is, the conclusion is, that Socrates is mortal. You see, you take the middle term out of your conclusion, and then you have the statement, Socrates is mortal. So you arrive at a result out of two statements. And that is what Mrs. Eddy asks us to do in Christian Science, that these propositions are stated rightly. And if we don't state them rightly, the conclusions are wrong. And as we go on, you must keep that in mind, because I come back to this syllogism, because we will see that Mrs. Eddy's logic demands an even further, stricter statement of the major and minor proposition than in classical logic. And if one doesn't see that, then we get all those wrong conclusions which we find all over the place in Christian Science. So, just make this another point where I can refer to, so that if I refer to a syllogism and about the major proposition and the minor proposition, you know what I'm talking about. Therefore, we begin to see what Mrs. Eddy meant when she said that her battle is really against wrong or false premises, false propositions. There starts everything wrong or right. She says that error in the premises leads to error in the conclusion. Can you see that we have to be careful what our premise is? That we state our premise correctly. And that premise, now we have seen, is not just stating two sentences. Just make two statements and then say, now I combine them. See, that has led to that awful thing of combinatorics in Christian Science. That awful thing all goes wild the moment you just combine anything and draw a conclusion. And this has become so rampant in the thought of the students that we must do something about it, so that we get back to normality and get back to sincere scientific thinking and not to this awful combinatorics that is going on. Just combining terms with other terms because two terms appear in the same statements, you take it as a middle term without asking, is the first proposition a general proposition, is the second proposition actually a specific case of the first proposition, and then only draw a conclusion. So Mrs. Eddy is very hot on that point and says, well, an error in the premises leads to an error in the conclusion. She even says that false premises actually will lead to the destruction of men. And that's what happened really in the Western civilization. That because the logic of the Western world, so helpful it was to establish science and scientific thinking, has really brought the world to the brim of death and of destruction. She says, in order to give us some hints about these propositions, she says that we should never reason from matter. Human logic is a ray when it attempts to draw correct spiritual conclusion regarding life from matter. If I would have plenty of time, I would show you a few syllogisms that underlie some of the books that come out in the Christian Science field. Just think of that book about the bridge, that big book of 400 or I don't know how many pages can just be reduced to one wrong syllogism. She says, never reason from duality. Well, if our propositions are not stated in the monistic way, but in the dualistic thinking, which is right in the classical way, then our syllogism, the syllogism of Christian Science compared with the syllogism of the classics, is not stated rightly. Again, we have to see that the syllogism of Christian Science is another syllogism than the syllogism of classical thinking, because classical thinking is too valued and Christian Science logic is too conceptual, and therefore the premises must be very different. Therefore, the premises stated must always be from the monistic sense, from the oneness, always about the allness of spirit, which has in the premise no counter facts. but count the feet. Well, see if... No, that was too far. I just wanted to introduce you that because as we go on, I may come back to show you how we have to state those syllogisms rightly. I go on to point 8. Well, after this little excursion into syllogism, I come back, and point 8 is two-valued logic. Two-valued logic is a preliminary step I just want to stress this very important transition from the two-valued logic to the Christian Science logic so that we are really well versed in it. I read you from the textbook a sentence to show how she reasons. She says, A knowledge of error, and its operation must precede what? That understanding of truth which destroys error. That's an interesting statement. That she says, that... which must precede truth that handles error, must be a knowledge of error. That seems to be funny, that we first should know error before we can handle error with truth. Therefore, we can see that somehow she starts out with the knowledge of error, that is the two-valued logic, and shows that this is a preliminary step for truth to destroy error. Now, in a way, we have seen that. See? That we have seen, first, we must state our case. We must state what is the two opposite concepts. And only afterwards we let understanding, the understanding of truth, decide which one of the concepts are right, is a value. Has error a value or has it not a value? But we have to state it first. We should not go out, she says, from a muddled sense, but already from a distinct sense of what is error and what seems to be truth, and only for the purpose of afterwards having that understanding of truth which destroys, now you come down again, which destroys error until the entire mortal material error finally disappears, can you see? Brings it to naught, so that only one factor has a value, and the eternal verity, now comes the verity, man created by and of spirit, is understood and recognized as the only true likeness of his maker. Can you see in this sentence how she goes up and down the levels in her logic? That she starts out right from the ordinary sense of saying, well, you must start out by knowing what the error is. You must start out that there is error, that there is truth. But only when you understand truth, you see, you go to the third value, understanding truth, and down she comes at once says that that truth decides which one is going to be destroyed, which one is a value, which one is not a value, so that she says the one error, that the error disappears, and the only value that is left is the eternal verity. Verity, man created, and so on. It doesn't matter which verity, that the only verity remains as recognized by God. And you go up again and stay there on the level of absolute Christian science. Can you see the constant translation in the logic? That he doesn't just stay in one logic and says, this is the one and only logic, and there is no other logic, and with this logic I reason out everything. We have to have that terrific flexibility which we have got through the levels, really. The levels helped us to get that flexibility where we see that one phenomena changes it changes definitely when it is lifted to another level or when it is translated down to another level. The phenomena changes, but not only the phenomena changes because the logic changes. Up to now we only described in the chart how the phenomena changes from one level to the next. But now we begin to see the logic of it that is behind why the phenomena changes. So in this way she has a lot of references. As I said, we have taken out dozens and dozens to every little aspect of this. And there are a lot of reference, just always showing that the error, you see, starting out with error, with the dualistic sense, is a right method. That we should know error before we can know truth. That error helps us to understand truth. Only repeat error when it becomes requisite to bring out truth. Can you see? It's error at the starting point. In order to bring out truth, it seems quite illogical, really, if we only have one logic. If we only have the one valid logic, this statement is wrong. But if we have that logic which I have been explaining to you now, we begin to see, oh yes, in one way this is true. Now I show you the very opposite. That means that he uses the very opposite logic too. She would say now that only the one valued logic really brings forth the two conceptional logic. That she would say the very opposite of it. She would say the broadest facts. She starts out with facts. The broadest facts array the most falsity against themselves, for they bring error from undercover. Can you see now the logic is different? Because out here are facts, the one-value logic. What does the one-value logic do? Now, just always remember the one-value logic as understanding is on the level of absolute Christian science. What does that do when it descends? When it descends, it brings forth the two conceptional logic. It brings forth what is error and what is truth. Let truth, it starts out with truth, uncover and destroy error in God's own way. It is again truth that has to decide what is error and what is not error. It doesn't say now you start out and you know the error and now by understanding that truth is the only value, you destroy error. Can you see you have to be enormously flexible but still scientific in your thinking to see is she speaking on the ascending way or is she speaking from the descending way? And according to that, her logic is different. Here in this case, she goes out from the monistic value, the one value, truth, and says that one-valued logic, when translated to the level of human conception, is bringing forth the two-conceptional logic, and defines which is the value, which is not the value. Therefore, that great statement which we use so much and which is so important in practice, you see, is that it says, by the law of opposites, after the truth of men had been demonstrated, the postulates of error must appear. Do not even say can appear, must appear. You see again, it's just the descending way and says, that's it. According to the law of opposite, after truth had been demonstrated, truth, one value, what must appear? That one truth tells you then exactly what is error and what is not error. By the law of opposite, it translates itself to the level of Christian Science and uncovers to us what is error and what is not error. Meaning, actually, you don't know right from the start what the error is that needs to be destroyed. Let truth uncover error in God's own way. Let truth, through the laws of opposite, tell you what is error and what is not error. Can you see that this is a statement that seems to be contradictory to the ones I gave right at the beginning of this eighth point, which says a knowledge of error is requisite before we understand truth. So, for the logician, this is absurd. It's contradictory. But when we see that Mrs. Eddy's logic was structural, that took in levels, had various ways, ascending ways, descending ways, then the logic becomes apparent. Her logic becomes understandable and reasonable. Yes. Well, that's that.